King's Book Review today, and we are joined by the author of My Father Took Away My Innocence, Purified and Sanctified at Last. Her name is Zizo Apleni, and she shares her story with us today. Zizo, welcome to Rise FM.
I'm good. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
All right. So I'm battling to hear you a bit. I don't know if it's me or if it's you, but if you can move around a bit, you know, so that we can get.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Perfect. I can hear you now.
All right.
Thank you so much for coming onto the show. And I think first off, just for being so willing to share your story. I think it's one thing to live through that experience, but to also want to pen down a book, go on a radio show, talk about it as well, is, you know, just something that's so, so big. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much.
Talk us through who Zizo is and, you know, just where this whole journey began.
All right. So I was born to two single parents. They are not married. They met at college. But as soon as my was told that my mom was pregnant, he didn't want anything to do with the pregnancy. Mm. But after some time, they rekindled and they decided that a child needs to know both parents. Mm. And then that was when I was introduced to this man who was to be now my father. And I was excited to finally have a father in my life. At this time, I was probably about 5 or 6 years old, and I got introduced to this man and he was my father, and life continued. Now I had this person to call a dad, and as growing up, you know how kids are, especially daughters with their father. So yeah. I was also very excited to have a person that I can call my dad. And then at this time I was living with my grandparents in my rural areas. So, when I was about 6, going to do grade 1 at 7 years old, my dad asked that I go and live with him in the rural, in the city of Mthatha, mm-hmm. in the Eastern Cape. Mm-hmm. Then I went to live with him. But when I went to live with him, he was living with my stepmother now, and life was not good. It was a typical stepmother and child relationship. It wasn't normal. I was not used to the abuse that I endured there. And even then, I found that they are physically abusive towards one another.
Yeah.
So that was also something that I was not used to, because when I was living with my grandparents, I never got to experience that.
Yeah.
So when they had this big fight this other day, my stepmother and my father,
mm-hmm.
and when they fought, I was caught in the middle, and my stepmother decided to take her daughter, who was now my half-sister, was also living with us, and she left. And she left me with my father, and it was on that night that my father raped me, you know. And in my mind, I thought it was a normal thing that happened between each child and their father. I thought it was a normal relationship that all girl children and their fathers, this is what happens when they have a relationship, you know. So I lived with that up until I was 13 years old, that I was able to speak out about it.
You know, Zizo, now that you're saying to me, when it happened the first time, you thought that this, yes, is something that's normal between a father and a child.
Yes.
So which means, I mean, you did not really grasp in the beginning that this is not something that's normal. My father is not supposed to, one, look at me this way. He's not supposed to touch me this way. When did it really ring to you that something is not right? My father's not supposed to be touching me like this. My father's not supposed to, he's not supposed to be doing this to me at all.
Yes. So it was in 2006. I was now 12 years old and I just started my period.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not living with my dad at the time. I was at a boarding school. And when I went to tell the matron who lived with us, I told her that this was happening. And she just warned me about boys, that boys are not allowed to touch you. You will get pregnant. And you must remember, this is like 2006. GBV was not something that was spoken about. You were like parents would not sit down with their children and tell them exactly what happens when you start your period. Yeah. You know, I was just instilled fear that if a boy touches you, you'll fall pregnant. And I was scared of this pregnancy because in my head, I thought it was something like HIV virus at that time, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to get pregnant. I didn't want boys touching me. And then she started reading a story about sexual awareness and all of that. But then in this story, she read a story about an uncle who was inappropriately touching his niece. Mm-hmm. And in my head was like, no, the uncle is wrong because it's only fathers who are allowed to touch their children like that. You know, the uncle was wrong. So even then, and I did, when I went to visit my dad, I told him that, listen, I heard about this story about an uncle touching the child in their private parts. And that's when the threatening started, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he started threatening me that if ever I talk about this, no one would ever love me. I would be known as a liar. He would never buy me clothes again and all of that. And that's when I kept really quiet now about it, because he had started threatening me.
Sure. And where was your mother at this point? I mean, did you have a very close relationship with your mother? You know, close enough for you to be able to kind of express, this is kind of what's going on at home when I'm with dad? Because, I mean, of course, you don't really understand.
Yeah. So my relationship with my mother, as I said, that even before I went to live with my dad, I was living with my grandparents.
Yeah.
So it was that relationship that my mom would come and visit during when she got paid. She was a teacher, and so on the 20th she would come bring me nice stuff and all of that. So it was that relationship. And then in 2002 I only lived with her for a year.
Mm-hmm.
and then from 2003 up until 2007 I was at boarding school. So there was no relationship between me and my mom. I just knew her as that, okay, she's my mom, she brings me nice stuff, she buys me Christmas clothes.
Yeah.
But there was no, there was nothing above that, that I would go to her and be like, mom, this is happening to me. I didn't even know where to begin. And for me, it was normal. I thought it also happened to her with my grandfather.
Yeah,
I thought my cousins who were girls, my uncles did that to them, but no one spoke about it. So I thought it was something that was normal, that was supposed to happen. And up until I got to speak out about it, that's when I also got the shock of my life that I had kept quiet, thinking this was normal, whereas it was not normal.
Then, I mean, this is a whole 360 then of your emotions.
Yeah.
And your feelings at 13 years old. How do you navigate that? I mean, only at 13 years old, you are kind of entering your adolescent stage as well, where you've got a lot of feelings that are going on. You're not really understanding what's happening with your own body. And you've also got somebody that's violating that very same body. How do you navigate that whole 360 of a change in feelings? Because now you know my father's actually abusing me.
Uh-huh. So how it got out is that I felt pregnant during the whole thing. And my mom was called to the boarding school to come and question me as to how I got pregnant. And I didn't even know how it happened. And it was when my mom explained to me that this is what needs to happen for a person to fall pregnant. And that's when the light bulb moment clicked on me that, oh, shoot, this has been happening to me for this whole time. And I told my mother that this was happening to me. And fortunately for me, my mom was like, listen, I believe you and I trust you in as much as we don't have a relationship, but I know you. I know what kind of a child you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you are not a liar. I believe you and I will take this upon myself. Don't be afraid of anything. I will support you. That's when we started going to the police and everything like that. But then my dad was denying everything. So everything was just came tumbling upon me. And as you said that now I was an adolescent and I was starting high school, grade 8, and boys were starting to notice me, and I was just afraid of male figures in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Finishing school was a hassle for me because I felt that every man that is in my life is out there to destroy me, is out there to hurt me. So that's how this whole experience for me changed how I see men before I got to healing and forgiveness and all of that. But before I was healed, I just thought every man who came into my life was there to destroy and hurt me.
How do you find that journey of healing and forgiveness? How do you find your light again, Zizo? Because I think, geez, man, I'm so sorry, first of all, because this is something so different. It's your father. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Your father is supposed to be your protector. Your father, yes, is the one that is supposed to, if something like this ever happens to you, but it happens with a different man, you know, I can always go to my father. My father is going to protect me, yes, at all, yes, costs. But when something like this happens and it is at the hands of the one that you're supposed to call your protector, it is a totally, yes, different story. You are right. You are never going to look, or it's going to take time for you to look at another man and say, this person is here to actually love me. This person is here to actually protect me. Because the first person that was supposed to do that disappointed you.
Yes. So it was very difficult in that regard, because there was, in my eyes, I didn't see anyone to turn to. I didn't see anyone who would be able to take away the pain. As you said, that the person that I thought would be able to take away pain if something happens to me in the streets was my father. Even towards my maternal family, it was difficult for me to go and just cry in my grandfather's arms, because I felt like he would also, I would cry and then he would hurt me, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just difficult for me. But then I turned to Christ, you know. I turned to Christ, and he was the only person who was able to console me of what had happened to me. I remember there was a time where I was asking and bargaining with him as to, because I was like, God, I don't understand why you brought me to earth for me to endure such pain, you know. I don't know what my purpose is.
Yeah.
And it was revealed to me that God wanted me to teach people about forgiveness. But before I could do that, I needed to forgive myself. I needed to forgive the whole situation. And that is when I got to understand that forgiveness was not about my father, but it was for me to be able to heal and to start my healing journey. I had to forgive the whole situation that had happened to me. Then I would be able to also heal others and tell people and tell my story. So that is how I got to the point of healing. First of all, it was for me to forgive my father. It was for me to forgive myself, my family, everyone who was around me, because I blamed them for not being able to see that this was actually happening to me. But when I got to a stage of actually forgiving, and it was also easy, now if I forgave myself, I forgave my father, it was also easy for me to forgive other people around me and make my life more easier.
Sure, Zizo, we're running out of time, but I quickly, because this is very important, what I want to ask. We have people in our families that have become enablers, you know, who experience, we've got kids who experience things like this, where their fathers, their uncles, their brothers are sexually abusing them. And families are keeping quiet. No one says anything because, lihlazo, what are we going to say to people when they find out that your own father raped you? What do we say to those very same families where young girls are being sexually violated by people that are supposed to protect them, but they fail to speak out? Sometimes we cannot even expect a young girl to speak out because she doesn't really know what's happening. But an older woman knows what's happening.
Yes. All right. I would like to say to them that, you know, for me, I think the only reason I was ever able to be able to fight was because of my mom. And I feel like if ever she had said to me, because my father was doing everything for me, he was paying my school fees, was paying for my, you know, like for my clothes and everything. Like, my mom was just supporting here and there. She easily could have said, listen, because you won't have anyone to pay your school fees anymore, let's keep quiet about it. And, you know, we'll deal with it, because now you won't have clothes you won't be able to go to school and everything like that. There's many things, there's many reasons that she could have counted for me not to stay, but she stood by me. And I don't think that I would have ever been able to be here where I am today if it was not for her, mm-hmm. you know. And I meet many victims nowadays, and they say that, listen, I see me being raped, I see me being abused, but the worst thing that could ever happen to me is for my family to say, let us put this under the carpet, you know. Yeah. I feel that is doing more damage than you can ever imagine. You are thinking that you are protecting the perpetrator because this perpetrator is a well-known man in the community, but at the end of the day, the person that you are most damaging is the victim, mm-hmm. you know. And there are days where you need to go to court, and in those days, the only people that you need are your family beside yeah. you yeah. know. And the support to the as victims that we get from our family is of utmost importance. It's of because I know my family, my father's family, didn't believe me. Still today, they do not believe me. Mm-hmm. But my maternal family, every single day, they assure me that, listen, my daughter, I believe you, I trust you, you know, all of that. And now that sits so well with me because I know that there are people who support my journey in everything that I do, you know. And for me, whether my dad hates me or loves me, it doesn't really matter at this point because the people that matter to me, yeah. I matter to them, you know. Yeah. So that's yeah. what I can say to them. Before anything else, please support the victim because that is what makes us be able to speak out, to write books, to talk at radio stations and do all of this. It's because we know that back at home, we have full support of our families.
Absolutely. Zizo, thank you so much for coming on to the show. Where can people get the book?
All right. So I am a self-published author, so the book can be gotten from me. I'm available on all social media platforms. On Facebook, I am Isabelle Ozam Apleni. On Instagram, I am Zizo_Apleni. Also on TikTok at Apleni Zizo. So anyone can DM me to get the book.
Absolutely. I wish you all the very best. Thank you so much for sharing your story, even just wanting to pen it down. I think it's also a journey of healing for you in some way or another. But I think you just sharing your story, writing it down and wanting it to go out there is a message of healing to so many other younger women who may have experienced something like this. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Sophie. You're welcome. Thank you.
When the ones and twos add up to hundreds, you know you are listening to the Raz FM Music Connoisseurs. And now you can listen even longer. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, join the Raz FM Music Connoisseurs from 7 until 9 p.m. as they serve up 2 hours of house according to jazz, classic, deep, tropical, soulful, and Afro House with some 45 ppm stirred in for extra flavor. Join the Raz FM Music Connoisseurs live on air and on social media. Raz FM, Mpumalanga, Azishe.
Just like that, we've signed, sealed, and delivered the show. Thank you so much to each and every one of you for choosing Raz FM. Back again tomorrow, same time, same place on Raz FM at mornings. My name is Tlotlang Moletsane, Kimisatsana Motswana, Mdukulu Maswati, signing out.